All right, who's ready for another cocktail?
Yes, please. Whatever that last one was, it was incredible.
That was a Bartesian margarita. Bright, smooth, perfectly balanced. You'd swear it came from a bar.
That came from the Bartesian cocktail maker?
Yep, pop in a capsule, press a button, and boom. Bar quality cocktails at home. My friend swore by it, so I finally got one.
I tried the Old Fashioned earlier. Honestly, it's the best I've had outside an actual bar.
Right? Over 60 craft cocktail options, ready in under 30 seconds.
And Bartesian's running their biggest holiday deal. Up to $150 off cocktail makers right now.
Wait, up to $150? That's huge.
Exactly. Holiday hosting just got way easier.
Make your holiday gatherings unforgettable with Bartesian, the cocktail maker that crafts smooth, bar-quality drinks at the touch of a button. Save up to $150 on Bartesian cocktail makers. The biggest savings of the year end December 2nd. Don't miss out. Order now at bartesian.com/drinks. That's bartesian.com/drinks.
Life gets messy. Spills, stains, and kid chaos. But with Anabe, cleaning up is easy. Our sofas are fully machine washable, inside and out, so you never have to stress about messes again. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, that means fewer stains and more peace of mind. Designed for real life, our sofas feature changeable fabric covers, allowing you to refresh your style anytime. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa effortlessly. Perfect for cozy apartments or spacious homes. Plus, they're earth-friendly and built to last. That's why over 200,000 happy customers have made the switch. Get early access to Black Friday pricing right now. Sofas start at just $699. Visit washablesofas.com now and bring home a sofa made for life. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Let's roll. This is Sports Rage. I am Gabriel Moretti. The Pips, the players, the hustlers, the podcasters, the people of Boston, and everybody else in between. Let's do this thing as we pick up the pieces following a wild weekend of football, college football, NFL football, and, of course, the 112th Grey Cup Championship game. The Saskatchewan Rough Riders defeat the Montreal Alouettes. 25-17 final score. And in a football game, it was closer than it sounded, but at the same point in time, the Saskatchewan Rough Riders were the better football team in the game for the full 60 minutes. And by Grey Cup standards, it really wasn't a Grey Cup classic or anything like that. In fact, it kind of had a regular season feel to it, actually. Like, for me at least, like some of those, like the playoff games, they felt like big games. Like, it felt like, oh, man, like you were on edge. Yesterday, it was sort of a slow start. It was almost as if, though, like the Alouettes didn't know it was a championship game. They had zero sense of urgency early in the game. Like, the Rough Riders came out, like, with urgency, like, every, like, I think the good way to put it is, like, the Riders sort of came out and with the attitude of every play matters, right? Attention to detail. Every little play matters. And the Alouettes came out with, let's throw a bomb. All right, let's throw another bomb again. Well, we're punting. Well, don't worry about it. Let's throw another bomb. Like, they kept on throwing deep passes. They weren't trying to sustain drives early. They didn't establish a run game early. And Scott's a good running back. And we saw in the second half, they started giving the ball to Scott because they realized that Alexander wasn't himself. And Scott kind of got it back in the football game. I like the play calling in the second half from Anthony Calvillo. They went to quicker hits. They realized Alexander wasn't himself. So let's go to quicker hits. Let's go to the ground game a bit. And, you know, the fourth quarter was great. Shea Patterson, former Ole Miss Rebel and Michigan Wolverine, comes in the short yardage situation. We should note he scored the first touchdown of the game. So he did. He did get touches in the game. But I never like bringing in a guy like that in the heat of the moment that hasn't really played with such a big, you know, important spot on the line. Easy to say now, but I just wouldn't. I don't know why they did that. You're on the 2 yard line. I would have just given a ball to Scott and pounded it in. They weren't stopping him on that drive. He would have scored. Like, I don't know why these CFL coaches. I don't mind, like, in a regular season. I get it. You don't want to get your quarterback killed, but there's no law, guys, in the CFL. There's not a rule book. It's not in the rules, coaching staff, that says you need to bring in the backup quarterback to score and shore up the situation. Right? Like, God forbid, like, you can hand it off or let the starter run it in. But they bring Patterson in, he fumbles, and that's the football game. Disappointing. ending to the season for a bunch of Alouettes. Very disappointing ending to the season for a bunch of Alouette bettors. The over, everything got effing blown up with Shea Patterson's fumble. It was extremely frustrating. But I don't want to take anything away from the Rough Riders. Davis Alexander wasn't 100%, but so what? That's football. That's sports. And I'm not going to diminish the Riders' win, even though Shea Patterson's fumble really, really hurt the bettors at the end of that game. We got Mo Kyle, we got Cam Stewart in the house. And Mo, I know you spoke to people with the Alouettes. And listen, it was no secret that Davis Alexander wasn't 100%. He couldn't scramble. So you took away that dynamic from him. And he couldn't really plant his foot. But at the same point in time, he also made plays as well. So I don't want to use that as an excuse and take anything away from Saskatchewan's season. Because truth be told, Mo, the Riders were the most consistent team from start to finish all year long.
Yeah, I think you posted a tweet yesterday, Gabe, postgame. Wire to wire, they were the best team, right? From week one to the last week of the season. But I'll say this, though. The biggest, happiest Rider player right now who is screaming with joy is Brett Lawther. Because remember, he missed that kick that would have put the team back up by two scores before that ensuing fumble from Patterson, right?
So he misses a lot of kicks, Mo. That's their weakness. They might 100%. Have to go get another kicker.
They probably will. But here's the thing, though, guys. We were speaking off air. The biggest reason why Saskatchewan won the football game, aside from the fumble and this and that, the running game. The Owls didn't have an answer to stop the running game for the Riders and how that was. They smashed that ball in between the tackles. Ouellette had a good game. Tommy Stevens on the short yard situation had good games. And the thing was, though, guys, coming into the playoffs, think about the D-tackle position for the Alouettes. Mustafa Johnson was not healthy. Ugowak was coming off an injury, too. He was not fully healthy coming in. They let go of what's-his-face from Baylor 2 weeks prior to the playoffs, right? So that position was not of strength but of weakness. And the Riders said, you know what? We'll play our game. We'll take the dink and dunk here and there. And we'll run it with Ouellette. And that's what they did so well. And the Owls just wore down for that two-quarter period. But by the fourth quarter, Cam, as you said off air, they were gaining momentum, but just didn't have enough time to catch up to the Riders at that moment.
They left. They didn't. There was no margin for error for the Alouettes. By the time that they really, like, let's be real, the Alouettes started to get back in it late in the third quarter. And then the fourth quarter was like it was swinging in their direction. But you know, there wasn't enough time, like, basically. Like, put it this way. If they don't fumble, let's say they don't fumble, they score, and they don't get the two, right? They're still down. That's the whole thing with Patterson. Patterson didn't really cost them the game. Plus, the Rough Riders would have time to march down the field. But you're right about Lawther. I thought it was going to be the difference maker in the game, and it nearly was. He could have iced the game, and he ends up missing. But, wow. I'll give credit to the Riders. They're very Philadelphia Eagle-like, actually.
Great call.
In the sense, like Mo just said that, you know, like the Riders, if you look at the game, they never pulled away. They weren't like, when you watch them, you're not like, yeah, this is an unbeatable football team. But they get the first down when they need to, right? Like they keep the sticks moving. They made the plays when they have to. And one thing I'm going to give the Riders credit to, and it was a difference in this football game as well, as Mo just stated, yeah, Ouellette was a load to deal with. Their ground game got it going. But their play calling was pretty much perfect. Like, there were times, guys, if you noticed, the Riders were aggressive on first down. Like, they would run, and then, boom, first down, they would throw a bomb. Like, there were a couple of big sort of just, like, jolt plays in these drives that got the sticks moving. Another thing, too, the penalty after, they know it, the Rod Smith, and they didn't talk about it, like, because it happened at the break. And Smith said, oh, I think there's a flag, but they never brought it up. But when Montreal scored a touchdown there in the fourth quarter, somebody on the Alouettes smoked someone after the play. Like, I saw behind, you could sort of see behind. I was like, holy shit, guy on the Riders just went down hard. Like, I don't know what happened because they didn't show the replay. And Rod Smith, as they were going to a commercial in between the quarters, said, oh, I think there's a flag. There was. And the Riders got the ball on the 40-yard line after. And it was just little things like that that just, like, guys, if you're trying to come back, Montreal, every one of these little first downs and free first downs you're giving them, you're making their life easier for them. Because the Riders were in choke mode, Cam. Like, if there were a couple of minutes left in that game, Montreal would have won.
That's what I said. They just ran out of time.
But there's four quarters in a game. Exactly. And Montreal didn't start playing until
exactly. The fourth quarter. Saskatchewan beat them up early in that game. And I was thinking, because you guys know I was on the Riders, I'm like, here comes Montreal. And they were making plays. Snead started to make some huge plays in the game. You talked about it. The running game was fantastic, but ran out of time, Morenci. That's the bottom line. That's why you got to play four quarters of football instead of a couple. But now you're right. And a good point by you too, Gabe. You know, it was a good game. But those playoff games earlier, all better. Like the BC-Saskatchewan game, legendary. Hamilton, Montreal, like all the early games, even in the quarters, like in the like the playoff games were better than the Grey Cup, in my opinion. But hey, bottom line, Saskatchewan gets it done. And yeah, the Melonheads are going to celebrate.
For the next 5 years.
It was a good fourth quarter. It was a really good fourth quarter. Like it started to look like, oh boy.
Yeah.
Like put it this way, like we could have potentially had overtime even. Right, if the Alouettes tied it at 25, although Rough Riders would have had a minute and a half still left or whatnot, but the fourth quarter was really good. It took a while for the game to get going, but it was a great year in the CFL. Like, you know what I mean? The attendance was really good. They averaged like 25,000. It was over 25,000. I know BC averaged about 28,000, a little under 28,000 fans a game. That's pretty good, man.
The BC centers.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, like for the CFL as a whole, like we're not going to get 50,000 people a game every week. It's just that's not happening. Right. So to average 28,000 is seriously impressive. And that doesn't even include, they don't count the 50 cent ticket sales for that stuff either. They have like a separate number for that. So they it was like 27,000 people. Like, put it this way, like, they got 50,000. They sold out, like, the home opener, but then they averaged 27,000 still for all the other games, which is damn good, considering the BC Lions were an average team this year, right? The Winnipeg Blue Bombers sold out every game. Like, they literally sold out every game that they played at. Calgary's attendance got better this year. Calgary has been struggling for past years. Calgary did a good job with the concerts and Poison and all that type of stuff, and they got better, so they actually drew. I think they got about 22 or 23 type of deal. Edmonton is turning the corner as far as the team is concerned. If they start winning, people will go in Edmonton, right? Agreed. So, you know, as long as they're not going to get 40,000, but they'll get their 25, 30,000 if they start winning, and it looks like they're turning the corner a little bit. So, really, you know, like the only team that really – and you know, you just brought it up, Mullick. Saskatchewan, who was sort of not struggle, but not the, you know, not the hot ticket that they were like 10 years ago, like in the province.
Right.
Right. You know what I mean? Like they haven't won forever. Right. They haven't won since 2013 or whatever. So the lack of winning caught up to them. As you just stated, Mo, they could ride this for a couple of years now. They won this attendance. So they could sell some merch as championship and all that type of stuff. They'll sell some seats and tickets off of winning. So really, the only trouble spot, Mo, in the CFL are the Toronto Argonauts,
and maybe even Ottawa.
Oh, yeah. And Ottawa, but no, I wouldn't say Ottawa. Ottawa struggled on the field, and Ottawa's attendance kind of got down into the 20,000 range. But
it was even worse, though. I think, because when they played Montreal in the last home game, it was more of an Alouette home game than a Red Black home game. Right? There's a lot of apathy towards Ottawa.
I can tell you right now, if I lived in Ottawa, I wouldn't have went to that game. Mo, it was terrible weather. They're a three-win football team in the CFL. I give the people of Ottawa credit, Cam.
Yes.
Yeah, Mo, for showing up at 18, 20,000 people.
It's always bleak. The team always stinks. Yeah, no, it's like, what are they selling?
No. If
like,
Ottawa are good, they'll pack that place.
Big time.
Like, right, we know. They have a good fan base there. So
Argo fans are different.
And you brought in, you got Ryan Dinwiddie running the show there in Ottawa.
And that's going to make them better. I think they might be the second best team today going towards next training camp.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, they'll be a playoff team now. Like, no offense to their coach, but, you know what I mean? It was time for a change in Ottawa. They got to get more discipline and tighten things up. Like, I like Tice. He was, you know, one of those players guys, but players coaches don't last, man. Players coaches are good for a year, and then after a while the same players just take advantage of you, right? Because they know, they, you know what I mean, it creates sort of a, you know, mistakes happen, penalties happen, and they all kind of know, I'm buddies with the coach, don't worry about it. Like, it's different. Like, if you, like the Buffalo Bills, good example, the Bills led the NFL in penalties in the Rex Ryan era, Like, they had the most penalties per out of any team in the league. And why is that? Why do you think that was? Because Rex Ryan was the coach. Rex Ryan had the most penalties as a coach. Like, all Rex Ryan would do is stand there and yell at the refs all day. Rex Ryan's a big buddy with all the a buddy type guy with the players. So the Buffalo Bills knew, whatever, dude, if I do something stupid, Rex won't even say anything to me. Like, you know what I mean? And if I hit someone late, Rex will secretly be happy and think it's cool that I just lit the guy up. So McDermott came in and basically, if you F around, you won't play. You know, it's point blank. You know what I mean? If you're undisciplined, you won't play. Like, character sort of matters. So I think for Ottawa, there's going to be a big culture change there, and I think they're going to get tighter and they'll get better. But I should note, last thing with the CFL season, both Toronto and BC are both screwed next year. Both screwed. I'd like to say, Mo, oh, you know what, the BC Lions, you know, they turn the corners the second half of the year and all that. Guys, the BC Lions will not play a home game until August next year. Their owner
said, woke up, yeah.
Yeah, their owner said, yeah. He said, this will be our last game, the last one. He goes, for all you fans, he goes, you know the World Cup is coming here. He goes, we will not be playing in Vancouver until August next year. And he said mid-August. He goes, we won't be back until mid-August. So if they can survive, I guess, the back end of their schedule. But now it should be noted the BC Lions are playing, and it's super cool. I'm going to go to the one of the games. I can't go to the mall because I'm going to go to the World Cup. But the BC Lions are opening up their season with two games in Kelowna, BC. Super cool. So yeah, that's and they're playing in Victoria. So they're basically setting, and you know what is really cool about this though is they're the only team, guys, along with Saskatchewan. Like, they're not the Vancouver Lions. They're the BC Lions. They are the British Columbia Lions. They're not the Vancouver Lions. So it's pretty cool that they're embracing it. They basically said, we're the BC Lions and these are home games. They're just not in Vancouver. Right? We're playing in Kelowna. And we're going to play in Victoria. And
great destination spots too, Marantz. See, those two of the most beautiful cities. Like, Victoria is awesome.
Kelowna, it's going to be really nice. Yeah,
beautiful. It's a good
the
idea.
Stadium in Kelowna only holds 8,000 people or something.
Yeah, right, I think there. It's going to 18,000. Right, they're going to expand
it.
They're expanding it to 18,000, I believe. So
17,000.
That's cool.
They're going to jam in some temporary seats in the end zones type thing.
But that's a football town in Kelowna, the Okanagan. The Okanagan Sun that play in the in the Canadian Junior Football League, they always do very well. They lost to the Huskies in the Canadian Bowl 2 weeks ago.
Yeah,
so,
like you said, Bo, it's a very big junior football area.
Yeah,
there's a lot of guys that actually play there that have played in the CFL. And even, you know, NCAA and stuff like that. But you're like Mo was saying, that area geographically, it's a high level of football.
Yeah.
In that conference, in that area, they have a nice little stadium too. So I'm cool. Like, I've seen it, but I've never been in it. And it is famous. Like, it's been there forever type of deal. People are like, oh yeah, it's been there forever. And this guy played there, and that guy played there. Like, so it's that's pretty cool. But the BC Lions actually care. The Toronto Argonauts don't. Right. So the Toronto Argonauts didn't bother to play in Ontario. They basically just said, whatever, we'll play our home games in Winnipeg and Regina, which is pretty weak. Like,
they could have gone to Guelph and McMaster.
You could have shown a little effing effort, man. Thing is, Ontario is massive. Like, how hard is this? Like, honestly, why didn't you just play at the University of Toronto? Nobody goes to Argo games anyways. Like, so what? Like, what's the difference? If you get 10,000 people, like, you know what I mean? Like, dude, there are multiple football stadiums in downtown Toronto. Like, they say, oh, it's not up to whatever. Screw you. It's not up to this. Whatever, dude. It's a couple of games. People would have liked it. And for the love of God, play in Guelph, play in Kitchener, play in
Waterloo. It's a great call. That's the thing. They have the facilities in
play
Guelph.
Play in Queens.
Wilfrid Laurier.
Play in one of the CIS schools. It's not hard.
You know, Mo, like you guys know, Western Mustangs, the Golden Hawks, all that area. Great call. Guelph Griffins. You know what I mean? These are football schools with facilities. Sure, not as big as BMO, but there's no excuse why you can't
play.
Yeah,
but you know
why
they didn't do it, Cab, is because it would have taken work from them.
Yeah,
it's not. It's like, all right, listen, we're gonna have to bring in some seats, we're gonna have to do this,
they invest in it, which they
don't want to. The BC Lions basically told Cologne, all right, we want to use this, and we're gonna do this though, we're gonna improve the locker room area, we're gonna build this, we're gonna do this for you. Like, you know, they got to work on it. You got to actually go and visit and say, all right, this is what we want to do, and like, the Argos are just basically like, oh, whatever. We'll play our games in Winnipeg. Winnipeg? Like, how did you come up with that? It's good. No, some of the guys playing in Hamilton would have been better, Cam. Just say, you know what? We're playing our home games in Hamilton. We've kind of been with the Ticats. We're gonna
you don't even have to go to Hamilton. Is what you talk about. And the crazy thing is, Gabe, there's so many of these like institutions, like rich kids, like St. Andrews College, like their facilities are better than some people. Like it's beautiful. Like it's unbelievable.
The high school stadium in Burlington, Ontario. Yes. Like, they have nice facilities.
Like there, those like, those private schools, their facilities are amazing. Like absolutely stunning.
So, no, it's shameful, but no, it just goes to show they don't care. They don't care. Like they,
and the worst case scenario they could have done is gone to Hamilton too. Like, you know, just down the road from the Huey W guys. Like it's there.
No, I know. It's 30 minutes. 35 minutes.
I don't know their logic to this, but Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment, right? And now Rogers. To be honest with you, maybe now that Rogers is involved, it'll as crazy as it sounds. Maybe now that Rogers is involved with the Argos, because it's kind of all bastardized now. Rogers and I know they're rivals, but with their teams. So you got Pelly involved here, and Rogers does like to win. So I think it's a good sign. Like they are bringing in Mike O'Shea, right? So they wouldn't be bringing in Mike O'Shea if they didn't. I'm not saying they don't care.
They I thought he's staying in Winnipeg now. It's not confirmed. He's not going to Toronto. He's staying in Winnipeg now.
I'm hearing Hamilton want him too. Like the bidding, I guess, is open, isn't it, for O'Shea?
I thought he's saying. Oh, well, I'll find out. Well, I'll find out what's going on here. But if he is open, that's a good point you bring up, though, Gabe.
You know what? They are saying that he is going to return, most likely.
Right.
I don't know if he signed the papers. Yeah. What led to O'Shea changing his mind?
I think there's a few factors.
I'd say money. They probably obviously did not offer enough money.
Money does help. Money does help for sure.
Because you know, because if you're, this is not a good situation if you're Winnipeg moving forward. Their bubble's about to burst. Zach Collaros, you can't win with Zach Collaros for much longer. You've got Chris Streveler. Like they put it out, they don't have a quarterback. You know what I mean? Like they don't have a quarterback. They have an aging football team. That bubble is about to burst. They're going to have to rebuild that, Mo, in Winnipeg.
100%, but you know, we spoke about it weeks ago, and I said, speaking to someone who was on the team last year, they said this was going to be the last ride with this core group before they broke up the band, right? Home game, all that stuff, and never got close to it. Never got close to that fourth quarter collapse in Montreal is the reason why they're not playing the Grey Cup.
So what are we saying, guys? Like, we're going to have a whole new shift of power. Like, the Elks are going to get better. We talk about the Red Blacks. Like, there's going to be – things are going to get different very, very quickly. These old powers are going to be gone. And they're going to be some new
There's
teams.
There's sort of a changing of the guard, but honestly, Cam, I wouldn't be surprised if it was a Grey Cup rematch next year. Like, that makes sense. Montreal's going to get back. They're good. Yeah, and listen, Montreal didn't lose all their half their players this year. They would have had a better record and all that. Like, the Alouettes are the best team in the East by far. So they'll get back. And then you get the West. Like I said, BC, it's going to be tough for BC. Yeah, you're playing in Kelowna and Victoria and stuff, but that's a lot of travel because you're going to be living in Vancouver. Right, they're not moving to Kelowna, so like suddenly you're living in Vancouver, you're going to Kelowna. Kelowna's like, you know, it's like 5-6 hours from.
Is it really?
Yeah.
It's like an hour flight.
It's an hour flight. It's an hour flight type thing. So
right.
Yeah, so it's an hour flight. It's not the end of the world, but like, it's a lot of traveling for them. You know what I mean? Like they're playing on the road essentially. Let's call it off what it is. Like they'll be traveling.
But the great equalizer for them though, Gabe, is that every visiting team that goes to Kelowna are not going to be familiar with that stadium, right? And they'll probably have a leg up on those teams.
Yeah, and it'll be a pitch for them too. Yes. Yeah. It's in the middle of nowhere for them.
And they're used to the whole end zone sites, their whole 9 yards. So,
not to mention, it's hot as hell in the summer.
Oh, dude. It's like
there's forest fire hot. It's hot. Like it's
Vegas
hot. Almost.
Yeah, you're right.
It's like 120 degrees type thing, like 110 degrees sometimes. So, like, that it's going to be hot for some of these football games. Although I think they're playing their first two games in Kelowna. I think the next two in Victoria, type of deal. So, and then you get Calgary better, but I'm just stating like from a team perspective, like I wouldn't be surprised. It's surprised if it's Saskatchewan and Montreal again. Can't wait to see the schedule release. Cause I want to know, cause Kelowna is not that Kelowna hotels are already expensive as it is. And so the second that I see this, I got to book a hotel, you know, I mean, for Kelowna for that game, because I'm going to go to the home opener.
I think maybe Christmas, or if not just after New Year's, is when the schedule will be released. That's what happened this past year. It wasn't until, like, I think mid-Jan when the schedule came out.
I think it'll be sooner. I think they pretty much know. Like, I think they know now. Like, they already know. They're just not telling us. I know the BC Lions know what dates they're playing in Kelowna, and they know, like, point blank. I asked them, and they said, yeah, you know, we can't publicly let people know type thing to anyone. Because I was trying to, I said, listen, I want to book my hotel before people know. And they're like, I can't tell you. They told me. they were very, but basically then he said, he was like, listen, he said June, he goes, it's in between June 5th and 7th. That was the gist of it. Like, so
I told you then.
They know. Yeah.
It's not like it's a month in between. You got a few days window.
No, but the little things like Mo said that they're not fully locked in is who's going to play on the Thursday, who's playing on the Saturday.
Oh,
but they know the schedule already. Like,
I can tell you, there's a lot of politics with that. Trust me. There's teams that will cry.
They have a final sort of conference call with all the teams that bitch. They'll go over it, right? You know what I mean, Mo? And then someone will say, whoa, I see you got us playing this on this day here in October. Why? Like, so they will, like, the teams do bitch. Like, we've talked about a lot. Like, CFL teams want the Thursday or Saturday game, blah, blah, blah. They all want different games.
I'll say this, though, right? Teams like Montreal, Edmonton, Calgary, for example, Hamilton, may have a more home-heavy schedule in June, July, at the expense for Toronto, Vancouver.
Yes, that's a good point.
So I think that's going to be heavy. And remember, the F1 race in Montreal has now moved up to May. So that gives the Alouettes that they might host three home games in a row because of this whole imbalance of the World Cup impact.
Oh, it's a challenge.
Vancouver. Yeah.
I'm sure. Listen, this next season's a bigger challenge for the CFL.
We're going to put you guys on the committee. I think you'd do a pretty good job.
They don't want us.
I have a lot of good ideas for the CFL. They don't listen.
They just don't listen. That's the problem. Thanks. Next question.
They don't listen. And I'll wrap it up with this. Either like the commissioner, man, this guy's disliked. Like early, like he got booed. They booed James Duffy yesterday, even, which I thought was like they were trying to see James Duffy get booed.
The book. Yeah. 2 weeks ago.
So he got booed. Like, but this commissioner, man, people are not a fan. Like, I'm gonna let it play out. There's nothing we can really do about it. So I'm not gonna. What can I do? I can't. They're not gonna listen to me about rule changes in the CFL. So I gotta just sort of live with it. But it was pretty toxic. Like, for the commissioner, I'm sure the commissioner was very surprised. I think he thought that, it'd be a big love fest and stuff. But his press conference did not go well, like, at all. Like, the Western old school CFL teams and media guys, they don't like this.
Yeah,
exactly. They don't want to
freeze
move.
And kill them.
Yeah, they don't want to move the goalpost. They don't want to be anything like the NFL. Like, they are really, like, dude, the guy in Winnipeg, like, really went after him.
In their defense, Gabe, I'm with them. It's called the Canadian Football League. It's not the NFL. And they see the big city slickers from Toronto used to work for the big network, the network that
he's kind of condescending to everybody, too.
Yes,
like, so,
it is.
You know,
you live at West.
That's the whole thing, bro. It's like, dude, you were the president of TSN.
Yes.
You had nothing to do with the CFL. And you come in here and you start like acting like you know what's best. You don't know what's best, you know?
Exactly.
You know, to defense of him. You know, I spoke to the CFL personnel guy like a week ago or a month ago, I beg your pardon, and I asked him, hey, what's up? Do you guys like okay? This goes, yeah, we were all on board. Teams are okay with these changes to see how this plays out. And you're right, Gabe, we have to let this play out first before we can actually react. So we need a sample size of maybe 3 to 5 years to really diagnose if this works or this goes against the CFL values.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see how this is going to play out.
I don't think it's going to end well. I'm Gabe. The whole thing is that these guys in Toronto have to understand, and you live out there now, they resent people like Toronto's hated across Canada. Like, you don't tell people, oh, yeah, I'm from, like, it's one of those things. And when you're screwing with the one thing, they don't have other, like, you know what I mean? There's no Raptors. There's no other thing. The Canadian Football League is their life. It's their lifeblood. So absolutely. you don't screw with it. Like, that's the whole thing, right? Yes.
And
so now you have a guy coming in there. Oh, yeah, we're going to do this. And it's like, are we? Like, what do you know?
Another thing is, too, this is like why. And I would have done the same thing if I was there at the press conference, if I wanted to, like, confront him, was he went off about how great of a season it was, about how attendance was great. Television ratings were great. The quality of the game was great. And the guy in Winnipeg said, so if things are so great, why are you changing everything? Like, right? It was a very good, like, kind of like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, if everything is so good, like, well, you know what? We think we could streamline this and, like, whatever. We know what you're up to. He's going to want to get to into an American expansion mode. It's a big mistake. You know what I mean? If they do that, we'll see if they actually do. They got to get a team in Moncton or in the Maritimes first. Halifax, Moncton area, but a hell of a season in the CFL. All right, NFL football. Detroit Lions, Philadelphia Eagles. I am ready to concede that I have zero confidence in the Detroit Lions moving forward. They're frauds.
Campbell, Gabe, he doesn't take points. I mean, enough of this fourth down crap. You could win games, take three every once in a while. Then he punts at the wrong time. Like, what's this guy doing? Like, what are you doing?
He's an idiot.
No, honestly, Gabe, it's nuts. It's nuts. We know football, three's good sometimes. It goes for it all the time. I don't care what the analytics say. You're costing your team. Like, put points on the board. You could win games, cover games, win games outright. This guy's killing them. Play calling. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but the Lions, like, with this guy in charge, I'm with you. I think they have the players on the
team.
Well,
what was funny was he goes for it five times in a row, literally. So, they're 0-for-5 on fourth down during the game.
Yeah.
And then they're down by 10 with 6 minutes left and he punts.
Yeah.
It's like, bro, like, it's 4th and 10. Like, we don't have a choice now. We have to go for this, coach, because we're running out of time. And leaving the threes on, it never ends. He does this all the time.
Yep.
And he leaves the threes on the field early and then they're down by 10 late. And then he kicks the field goal to cut it. But it's not just Dan Campbell's decision making process. And I get it. They have a ton of injuries on the defensive side of the football. I'm not going to not acknowledge this. But so what? Like, everybody has injuries in football. It is what it is, guys. That's why you have backups. Right. That's why you have depth. Yep. That's what it's called.
Yep.
So, like, their secondary is beat up. I get it. But, Mo, we've seen this time and time and time and time again with Detroit. Right? Week one, Green Bay. They go on the road opening week. They score 13 points. They're flat. Kansas City game, primetime television last month, Sunday nighter, same thing. They go on the road, they're flat. You know what I mean? Same crap. They score 6 points.
Viking game.
Three points. It's over and over. Now, last night, statement game against the Philadelphia Eagles. It's not that you lose. It's that you're bad. It's just that you're bad. Like, you can't stop them. You can't get first downs. Jared Goff, every second pass he throws, gets batted down at the line of scrimmage. You give the ball to Gibbs. He makes a big play. Then you don't give it to him again. Like, you know what? I would just give the ball to Gibbs on every damn play if I was Detroit. Right? Like the Bills. Just give the ball to Cook. Like, stop effing around so much with this gimmick crap. But the Detroit Lions are frauds. They won't win in the playoffs, Mo. Like, they won't.
No.
I bought into this team. I thought before the year started, you know what? They can go to the Super Bowl. They're that good. Dan Campbell, you know, can't get out of his own way. Dan Campbell shouldn't be calling the plays now. So now he's calling the effing plays. And, you know, defensively, they're okay, but they're not good enough. Like, we've seen. If you can't go into Green Bay and win, you can't go into Kansas City and win, you can't go into Philadelphia and win, why am I supposed to believe, Mo, that in January you're going to go on the road and start winning these games in the NFL against good teams in bad weather? They're not. The Lions are not going to the Super Bowl. Scratch them.
No, and you know what? The fact that Campbell stripped away play calling duties from John Mortson, who he brought in, handpicked to replace the Chicago's Ben Johnson, it makes you wonder, like, well, what was his confidence level about Mortson being the play caller for the first few weeks of the season? And now,
I look at it as, why are you changing anything? What are you hitting the panic button for?
There's nothing to panic about, though, because you have the best running back, one of the best running backs.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So you cause chaos in the room. You're like, what are you changing? Why are you calling the plays? And now everybody loves Campbell, but now people are going to start to look at Campbell about the play calling. Like, why are you doing this? The offense was fine before. You didn't have a play calling problem. You have a choking problem. You're chokers.
And here's the thing, guys.
You're just chokers against good teams.
For sure. And here's the thing, though. They're final seven games, guys. They have three home games straight coming up, including Thanksgiving when they play the Packers, right? In their final three games, they go to the Rams. They're home to Pittsburgh, which might be a Pittsburgh home game. Go to Minnesota, who you lost to, by the way. And you go to Chicago, week 18. So really, like, how many wins do they get out of the next seven games? Maybe like four more wins, and they're a 10-7 team in the wild card seed.
The Bears are going to win this division. This is insane.
Oh!
but the thing is, the biggest weakness for this Lions team, and you made the point before, Gabe and Cam, their secondary. They have never addressed. They've drafted here and there, but they've never had. Brian Branch is a game changer, but he's not enough. They need more guys to lock down. Plays. Look at the NFC North as a whole.
They've drafted guys, Mo. They just haven't, like, Terry Arnold.
They haven't developed them.
They haven't developed these guys. They haven't turned out.
No.
Like, if you look over the last five, I can't, off the top of my head, there was the other kid from Oregon, whatever. Like, they have drafted these
Jeff
DBs.
Okuda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the other kid that got hurt all the time, Okoda from, what was his name, Okada. From Ohio State.
Okuda.
He got hurt all the time. Like, it's amazing. They're cursed with their DBs. They're like the Bills with wide receivers.
Yeah.
Like, they always draft and are drafting late in the first round. So they draft who they think is like this star cornerback from college, but he gets hurt or he's not as good as you think he is. And it's been a problem for them because they've drafted well on the D line. Like, they've hit it out of the park on the D line. They've done well. Like, pretty much the Lions draft team has been very good at all positions except cornerback for whatever reason. Or as Mo was saying, maybe they got bad DB coaches too. And they're not, you know what I mean? They're not developing these guys properly. But I'm not taking the Lions seriously anymore. I'm out. Like, I'm not, this isn't a little over, I lost a bet overreaction thing. I'm just done with this team for real. Like, they're frauds. They're frauds. And I've defended Jared Goff over the years and stuff, but there's a ceiling with Jared Goff. Like, if things aren't going well for Goff, you're screwed, Cam. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, he's not, like, and I like Goff. Remember, we fought and I've defended him over the years and stuff. Mm-hmm. But when things are not going well for Goff, he cannot single-handedly, like, change it. He can't save him.
No, he doesn't have that DNA of Mahomes. You know, Allen.
He needs the entire team to be playing well and the system to be working, and he can run it. But if it's not going well, you can't say, oh, don't worry about it. Our QBs will make a couple of plays for us here. He won't.
Every year, I promise myself I'll find the perfect gift.
Something they'll actually use.
And love. This year, I found it. The Bartesian Cocktail Maker.
Oh, that's the one that makes cocktails at the push of a button, right?
Exactly. Over 60 bar-quality drinks, from martinis to margaritas. Perfectly crafted every time. I got one for my sister. And maybe for myself, too.
Smart. It's the season of giving and sipping.
And right now, you can save up to $150 on Bartesian cocktail makers.
That's a real holiday miracle.
Because the best gifts bring people together and make the holidays a little easier.
Give the gift of better cocktails this season with Bartesian. Mix over 60 premium drinks at the touch of a button. Save up to $150 on Bartesian cocktail makers. Don't wait. This offer ends December 2nd. Shop now at Bartesian.com/drinks. That's BARTESIAN.com/drinks.
Time for a sofa upgrade? Introducing Anabay Sofas, where designer style meets budget-friendly prices. Every Anabay sofa is modular, allowing you to rearrange your space effortlessly. Perfect for both small and large spaces, Anabay is the only machine-washable sofa inside and out. Say goodbye to stains and messes with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics that make cleaning easy. Liquid simply slide right off. Designed for custom comfort, our high-resilience foam lets you choose between a sink and feel or a supportive memory foam blend. Plus, our pet-friendly, stain-resistant fabrics ensure your sofa stays beautiful for years. Don't compromise quality for price. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your living space today. Sofas start at just $699 with no-risk returns and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Get early access to Black Friday now. The biggest sale of the year can save you up to 60% off, plus free shipping and free returns. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
He's like Trevor Harris of the NFL. Think about it. Accurate. You know, he's got a ceiling. He'll never be the franchise
guy. Trevor Harris is better.
What a great guy.
Now he is. Now he
is. Another one.
24 hours ago, who knows, right? Yeah. But now he is. But he is what he is. He is a guy that will – he's a B-plus, A-minus quarterback at best. That's what he is in the NFL.
He's a very – like you say, he's really good. He's not a superstar quarterback, but he's a – top-tier system manager. You know what I mean?
He also has wicked weapons, Gabe. Like, Gibbs is unreal. Like, that's the whole thing. So, you know, you've had speedy receivers.
Yes and no, James to be Williams, honest with you.
LaPorta.
He's got – Gibbs is amazing. I don't dispute that. I've always been a big Jahmyr Gibbs fan.
He's huge.
Amon-Ra St. Brown is okay. Amon-Ra St. Brown isn't amazing. Jameson Williams is fast as hell. He doesn't get open. He doesn't run good routes. To be honest with you, their passing attack is very kind of pedestrian, to be honest with you. Like, it's not like they have – it's all run on play action. Chris Collinsworth brought this up, like, against the Kansas City Chiefs, and he was right when he said during the game, he goes, the Lions can't throw the ball. Like, he said, like, he goes, their perception is that they have this potent offense. But he basically said, he goes, if they're not running the ball and they're playing from behind, they can't throw it. And it's pretty crazy. It's true. You saw it last night. They were playing from behind. They were trying to throw the ball. They couldn't do it. Right? Pass were getting batted down to the line of scrimmage, incompletions, one hops. Like I said, Amon-Ra St. Brown is so overrated. He is. Like, he's not – he's okay, but he's not, like, a true number one. And Williams is fast and gimmicky, but he disappears for large stages of the time during the game.
But I think that's play calling on why they don't use Jameson as well as they should. Mm.
I think it's him too, though, Mo. Like, he – like, last night is a good example. They were losing, and he was laughing on the sidelines, bro. You know what I mean? Like, everybody else kind of looked upset. He was sort of sitting there laughing about something.
Right.
Right? Like, I've heard this, too. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the betting stuff. You know, I'm not saying he's Pete Rose, but it was just stupid. Like, at practice, like, he doesn't – he's not locked in, man. And it's a whole sort of culture thing with that team. Like, you know what I mean? But he's good. I mean, yeah, they're really good, but – how many times have they scored 6 points or 10 points this year? I mean, good offenses don't do that, guys.
I have a question for both you guys. Right now, do you have more confidence in the Lions or Eagles to make it to the NFC title game right now?
Eagles.
Oh, the Eagles for sure, Bo.
Even with their question marks and
offense. Eagles
have problems. They find a way to win, though. They win ugly.
Yeah, exactly. There's only two teams for me that are contenders in the NFC now. There's only one team that I think that can beat the Eagles.
What, the Rams.
The LA Rams.
And they were that close on
the block. But I'll tell you guys this. The Seattle Seahawks have 4 turnovers in the game, come back, cover, almost win that game down the stretch because Myers said he can't make that kick. He's old. He's good. Gabe, you talk about like Sean White. That's Myers. He's the same guy. 50 and under, he can't do anything or he's got dead leg. But I'm going to tell you this. That team rallied. Despite Sam Darnold's mistakes and that defense played at such a high level, I would actually consider the Seahawks contenders still. And I'm very disappointed at the way they played. It's one game for Darnold, but I'll tell you, 4 turnovers and they lose a game barely to the Rams. Like their defense stifled them the whole damn game.
No, I like Seattle. I took Seattle. I had a plus the points. I'm glad that they covered, but they're not going to the Super Bowl. They're good.
They have a very winnable 3 weeks coming up. Tennessee, Minnesota, and Atlanta coming up.
Yeah, they're really good, Seattle. Like, I buy into them, but it has to be a concern. I mean, Darnold turned the ball over as much as he did against good teams. And, you know, you get the flashback back to last year.
Rams is his kryptonite, though. Sam Darnold does not play well the Rams, right?
I think the same thing the last time they played the Rams, too. No, the problem with the Rams is they're just so well-coached and the way they disguise defensive coverages. Darnold was picking other teams apart. He was confused. Like, he didn't realize, like, throwing to spots, guys cutting in front of JSN. Gabe Barner had a great game. Your boy from Michigan. Like, I love this guy. And they grinded the whole game. But if Darnold just gets out of his way, the Seahawks, I think, can beat the Rams. He just can't turn over the ball. They can beat this team. They can.
I think the Seahawks will... You know, they're going to make the playoffs, the Seahawks, but it'll be like they could win or they could lose, like in the playoffs, like even their first wild card.
I'm just saying the Rams are a beatable, like the Rams are awesome, but they're a beatable football team.
Well, everybody's beatable.
Yeah.
The Eagles are beatable. Everyone's sort of beatable, but they're not like there's a tier system to this. You know what I mean? And the Eagles and the Rams are tier one. And then you got the tier two, the Seahawks, the Bears, the Packers, the Lions of the world. And there's a lot of them. Right? That's what I'm saying. Like the wild card games, like the NFC is normally crap. You know, let's call it up what it is. It's been a subpar conference over the years. It's not this year. Like you're going to have some really good games like in the first week of the playoffs in the NFC. And in fact, we'll do a, if you look at if the playoffs started today type of deal. If the playoffs started today, the Philadelphia Eagles would be the one seed. The 49ers would play against the Rams.
Historically, they play them tight, too.
Yes.
Yeah. We're just talking that's not about easy. How the Rams on the Seahawks, this is an opposite. If you're the Rams, that's an effing nightmare. Like, the last thing you want is the Niners. Like,
yeah, the Niners are going to
own
too.
Your ass.
Yeah.
And the Niner fans literally take that stadium over for real. Like, it's no joke.
It was like, on the Seahawks home game yesterday, too.
It's like, I'm not even kidding. Like, there's like 75,000 of these people. Like, the Niner fans, it's their thing. Like, they take the stadium over, bro.
How good is the NFC West, Gabe? So, like, you're like, those three of those teams are awesome. Like, you know what I mean?
The 49ers? 49ers and Rams would be a battle. Like, this, that's what I'm saying. Week one, that's not easy. As it is right now, it's pretty crazy. You get these division rivals. Packers would be at the Bears in the playoffs.
That'd be fun.
And the Seattle Seahawks would visit Tampa Bay.
Expansion Cousins going at it again.
Yeah, that's what I said. That's cool.
That's what I said, Cam. Like, Seattle's first playoff game will be a toss-up. And Seattle at Tampa Bay is the ultimate toss-up football game.
Big time. They already came into Seattle and won. Baker Mayfield had a lot of magic that game. But, yeah, that's if those play, I almost wish the playoffs started because those matchups rock.
Thing with the Buccaneers, though, they're trending in the wrong direction right now. And I like this Tampa team, but – there's only so many injuries that you can go through before it catches up to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this Carolina catch
their defense is getting ravaged.
Yeah.
Oh, they're not as dangerous as they were. Like they're in one of these tiers, you know, tier belows. They'll end up winning the division, but the wheels have fallen off on their season here, suddenly sitting at 6-4.
Right.
In the AFC, the Denver Broncos would be the one seed. The Jacksonville Jaguars would visit New England. The Los Angeles Chargers would play at Indianapolis. And the Buffalo Bills are the five seed right now, and they would play the Pittsburgh Steelers, who just lost Aaron Rodgers. So how long is Rodgers going to be out for? I don't know, but Mason Rudolph is going to be the new quarterback of the Pittsburgh Steelers. I don't think the Steelers are that good to begin with, Mo.
Might flip Pittsburgh.
I don't even think it's a downgrade. To be
honest, you might flip Pittsburgh for Baltimore, right? It might be Baltimore and Buffalo wild card weekend.
Yeah, Cam could be right though on that. Like,
but no one think about
how
Mason
much
Rudolph
of a downgrade it is. Mason
you
Rudolph
know,
can play.
You know one thing, and this has happened for years. Mason Rudolph, when he gets that first role, he's great for a few weeks, and then teams kind of figure it out. We'll see what happens. But Aaron Rodgers, the overthrows to Metcalf, like the way he's running his offense, I was like, please retire. I know you're a first ballot Hall of Famer, but you're done. Like, you're done, dude. It's been a brilliant career. But Mason Rudolph, at least, is a professional football player. He'll go out there, and with the Steelers defense, I don't think it's much of a downgrade.
Yeah, but how many yards do you get from Mason Rudolph, though? He's a guy that throws for 125, and that's it.
The problem is, Jalen, when Warren gets hurt, now we got to worry about the running game because that guy was an all-purpose back. Catch, run, do it all. That's the thing. Like, Rudolph knows how to play football. Like,
they're not winning anything anyways.
No, the Steelers are very
like, they're not a real team, like a real serious threat, in my opinion. Kansas City are now 5-5. They're in a lot of trouble. The Kansas City Chiefs have real issues now at 5-5. Baltimore are 5-5, but are getting healthier. And the division that they're in, there's a light at the end of the tunnel, not to mention they get the Jets this week. So looking at the teams that are sort of on the outside looking in right now, you know, in the AFC, it probably finishes kind of the way that it does, with the exception of, will Baltimore catch Pittsburgh? I guess Buffalo still could win the division potentially if the Patriots actually just stumble and lose a game or two.
And they get them again, right, at Foxborough soon, though.
Exactly. So that's what I'm saying. Like, Buffalo still could win a division, but, like, I'm just saying, like, the teams that are on the outside looking in right now, Jacksonville's got that last spot at 6-4. Houston are right there at 5-5, so they're battling for that division. And you got the Chiefs and Ravens. Right, at 5-5.
And the Chiefs have already lost to four of the teams who are holding playoff spots right now.
That's a good point. They keep losing to these teams,
Gabe,
right?
Gabe, you want to talk about fraudulent teams? You want to talk about fraudulent teams? How about Jeff's Chargers? Like, you go in there and pound teams and you let Jacksonville beat you up? Jacksonville took the Chargers and threw them in a dumpster that game. They just dominated them. Like, it was
they're
close.
They're
like,
tier
what
two
is
Ken,
wrong with
Chargers.
That team?
They're not.
They're flakes. They're flaky.
Something about them playing in Jacksonville does not drive.
No,
well
it
with
is
them.
No mold. Like if you're a good team, like you're gonna have bad weeks. It's a National Football League, but
of course
they never have that game where they go, you know what, we're gonna punch you. They'll play well against a good team, and then they do this stuff all the time. They're like the Lions of the AFC.
Get Ken, you brought up the point about the Buccaneers and how ravaged their defense has been. Think about the O-line for LA and
That's
how many
true.
Guys they lost. That was the strength of this team. Guys, remember, when they went to Brazil, they smashed up the Chiefs' front seven with that front five. And they all went down one by one, right? Pipkin, this guy, that guy, Joe Alt, whoever it is. And now they're playing guys who don't deserve to be on the football field, and that's how they've been exposed, that they don't have a proper O-line of depth to work with. And they're going to get exposed even more going deeper into December football.
I agree. Now. No, listen, you lose Slater and you lose Joe Alt. You lose two of the best, two of your five best players, two of the two best offensive linemen in the league. You're going to have problems. I don't dispute that. But Cam is right in that, yeah, you got offensive line issues. They haven't had their offensive line for a month, and they've won games still. That was just a gutless, flat-ass performance. You get that? Like, that's the NFL, Cam. They, you know, Atlanta Falcons do that. Like,
Falcons
can beat the Bills one week and lose 30-0 to the Dolphins the next.
Yeah,
week.
Like
guys, you guys, like, what are
exactly.
you? Like, who are you?
Who are the Falcons? Carolina comes back and, like, you know, they had that game there, and Carolina Dowdle was amazing. But yeah, there's just teams that you just can't trust, and we know this league's nuts. Like that line seems weird.
Are one of them.
Yeah.
Oh,
well,
by the way,
we'll just put Adam to the list. The Chargers are not winning the Super Bowl. We'll put it that way. Scratch them. They're not winning.
By the way, the Chargers. On a bye week, they play the Raiders in Vegas. After that, Philly, KC, Dallas, Houston, and Denver.
They better get some offensive linemen back or they're going to get smoked. Those are good defensive teams.
Chargers, when it's all said and done, they're going to be battling for that last wild card spot. Like,
but they may not be even there, though, Gabe, right? Think about that, the last five games alone. Philly, KC, Dallas, Houston, and Denver. Where is the win coming from? Houston, Raiders? That's
it.
Yeah,
the teams behind them have their own issues, too.
Yeah.
They've got a nice head start on everybody.
Yeah.
They have a two-game lead on the wild card. So that's a nice little cushion to have. And don't forget, they beat Kansas City already, too. So it's not like KC has some sort of big edge against them. You know what it really all – it comes down to your division, obviously, for the division stuff. But the conference record is the big tiebreaker, right, for the non-division teams.
Of course.
And the Chargers, guys, are 6-2. In the conference.
It's amazing. You know,
the Colts and the Jaguar loss, I believe, right?
They're going to own all these tiebreakers. Like, to put in context, the Chiefs are 2-4 in the conference right now. The Baltimore Ravens are 3-3 in the conference right now. Like Mo said, that's the Chiefs' biggest issue. Like, the Chiefs have a couple of problems. The Chiefs have a 500 record, which is a problem. They have a tough schedule moving forward, which is a problem. And they're 2-4 in the conference. Like, they're not going to own any of these tiebreakers. Like, that's their real issue. Like, massive game.
And people think, Gabe, they're just going to go in there and go, oh, yeah, exactly. That was my point. Like, oh, yeah, we can't have a playoffs without the Chiefs or whatever. I'll tell you, they bring that performance against the Colts with a bye week with that team. And the one thing we know, the Colts, even when they were not as good, that defensive front always gets to Kansas City. When, remember, when Kansas City was dominant, the Colts gave them problems when they played them. They better show up, because if they don't bring their A game, they're toast.
I agree. And I don't have any problem with seeing them not make it.
Me too. Go Colts.
Listen, there's still 7 games left, so I'm not going to. You know, exactly. A lot of stuff can happen.
We don't need them in the playoffs.
Don't forget the Colts beat. Don't forget when Jim Harbaugh was quarterback of the Colts, they went to KC in the playoffs, beat them in Kansas City in the '94 playoffs. Remember that, though, guys.
Yep.
So updated Super Bowl odds right now: the Philadelphia Eagles are 5-1, the Rams are +550, the Bills are +850. The Colts are 9-1. The Chiefs are 10-1. Lions 11-1. Good win for the Buffalo Bills this week. You know, they gave up a lot more yards than you would like, but it is what it is in points. But I'm not going to pat them on the back too much. It is what, you know, I kind of knew it. This is what they do, right? The Bills play up or down a level of their competition, but I would rather be the Buffalo Bills than the Detroit Lions. Like, the Detroit Lions can't beat good teams. Right, they'll beat bad teams and they'll hang 52 on a bad team and stuff like that, but they can't beat good teams. The Buffalo Bills can beat good teams. We stumble against bad teams, which is frustrating, but we're not going to play bad teams in the playoffs. Like, you know what I mean? Like, like you can catch the Bills flat, like, once a month. I have said this for years, and I don't even know why I get mad when they lose. And Cam, you've heard me say it for years. I say this every year. The Buffalo Bills go 3-1 every month. This is what they do. They go 3-1 every month, and we all like flip out when they lose that game because they always lose to a kind of a bad team. Then they'll win 3 in a row again, and everything will be good. And then they'll lose to a bad team, and everyone flips out again. Oh, fire McDermott. It's like rinse and repeat, right? This is what the Buffalo Bills do. So I think the Bills are sort of fine moving forward, but watching the Bills game against the Bucs yesterday, it's pretty clear. Like, the Bills need to outscore you, man. Like, going into the playoffs, they, you know, and if you're the Bills, don't even pretend. Like, just accept it and no, listen, our defense isn't very good. We're going to need to score 35, 40 points. Let's be super aggressive on offense.
We talked about it. I go, this is a great spot for the Bills against the Bucs. You said it. I said it because these are the type of games they win. And Allen, he went nuts. He made a couple mistakes and then he goes bananas. Like, that's the whole thing. You're right. The difference is the Bills can't stop teams. They're going to have to take it like upon themselves and say, we're going to do this and this and this. Let's hope everybody gets on board because the Stars, I actually still think the Bills can do some damage.
I agree.
Big damage.
I agree. And they got to play, you know, you can talk about outscoring teams. They got to play ball control. That means maximizing clock. So your defense isn't on the field playing a Mahomes-like offense that can exploit them. Right. So I think moving forward here, guys, if they can kind of master that game plan, you're right, Cam. They could be a tough out if they are the sixth seed or the five seed or maybe even a home.
You don't
want
to play Buffalo.
You don't want to play Buffalo. You don't want to play Buffalo, especially in the early rounds of the playoffs.
Well, the seedings, the sports books and the odds, they could give two whatever about the seedings. The Buffalo Bills are favorites to win the AFC, even though they're the five seed.
Correct.
The Bills are the best team in the AFC, but they need to prove it. I mean, you know what I mean? You could talk about it, right? I mean, it sets up perfectly for them. You know, it could be, you know, Buffalo has to go through Denver, but I think the Buffalo Bills would beat the Denver Broncos personally, even in Denver. All right, we got a Monday night football game tonight. But before we get to that, Mo, bad weekend in Montreal as the the Montreal Alouettes lose the Grey Cup. And Montreal Canadiens getting lit up. 5-1 versus the Kings, 7-0 versus the Stars, lose 3-2 to the Bruins. Rough little in fact, the Canadians have lost, what, 5 of their last 6 hockey games?
Yeah, we got to hold on the Cup Parade route for another few more weeks here. But not only that, though, the number of guys going down, Kirby Dach out for the next month and a half, Gouley's out for the next 2 months, Newhook's out till springtime with his ankle injury. This team, we said it before, guys, at the beginning of the year, they lack the depth, the quality depth. And now it's going to be tested going on this Columbus game on the road. You get the Capitals and Leafs coming up. And then afterwards, U.S. Thanksgiving, they go to Utah, Vegas, and I believe they go to Colorado as well. We're going to find out where this team stacks up by the time we hit Black Friday, if they're going to be in that conversation of a playoff contender or battling for a wild card spot. But quite frankly, the biggest topic here in the city is goaltending. Who do you go with? Sam Montembeau or Dobish as your number one guy? Both those goalies have not played well, and Dobish has had his moments, guys. But here's the thing, though. As Bill Parcells once said, if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have one quarterback. And right now the Habs don't have a goaltender to rely upon for this duration of the season.
It's funny, Mo, because I tweeted before the season started that if the Canadians are really going to be real cup contenders, they need better goaltending. And I got criticized. Oh, yeah, what do you know, Morency? You're in Vancouver. You don't know anything about the Habs. Montembeau's amazing. Like, yeah, okay, yeah, talk to me. Yeah, let's see. Talk to me in a couple of months, guys. Like I said, like, Montembeau sort of had a career year last year. You know what I mean? It hasn't – he's not, like, a great goal. He's okay.
He's good.
He's okay. And Dobish is played over his head a bit. Dobish isn't a number one goalie in the NHL either, right?
No.
I said it, Mo. They're waiting for Fowler.
Absolutely, 100%. But he's a year, 2 year away from being on
the problem. Yeah. So do you trade for someone? Do you bring in a vet until then? I would, personally.
I think they're going to hold off until after the Mountain West road trip.
Because I only said, no, I'm not saying this week, but I only say this because if you're the Canadians, you know Montembeau and or Dobish are not going to be the goalie of your future. Right. So like it's, you know what I mean? It's not like, oh, yeah, he's going to be on our team in 5 years. We don't want to give up on him. It's like, no, neither of them are good enough to be your goalie, really, if you're going to be a cup winner. You've got this superstar kid goalie in Cam Fowler that you're developing that's still a year or two away that in your mind, you know, the Canadians are thinking when they win the Stanley Cup in a couple of years, Fowler will be between the pipes. That's what their plan was. But I'm not going to throw their two goals out of the bus right now. You said they got injuries, but it is a little bit of a problem. The thing is, in the NHL, guys, there's no goalies out there. Like, there, it isn't like, oh, yeah, we need a goalie. Let's go trade for this guy.
You're right.
Like, people don't trade goalies, and there aren't. So the only way you do it is if you're really good and you know who some second or third string goalie is that's really good that doesn't play. Like the Canucks, like, knocked it out of the park with Lankinen. Lankinen was like the third and fourth string goalie in the Nashville Predators system, except the Canucks knew. They were like, this guy is good. Mm. So they brought him in, and you see, he's damn good. If I was the Canucks, I would trade Thatcher Demko. So that's what I'm getting to. Like, Demko's the guy. I would trade him. I'm done with Demko. He's hurt all the time. A good team might take a shot on him. But they had the Canadiens. I told people, Mo, when the Canadiens, and I like the Habs, but when the Canadiens were like 10-2 or whatever it was earlier this year, they were like this and that about the Habs. And I said, talk to me at Christmas time about what the record is. And to me, it's always that Christmas trip, Mo, that they normally do. But yeah, you're talking South about one Florida. Around Thanksgiving.
Yeah, the Mountain West trip.
This one's even worse. So that's like the new one. Yeah. It's like a month earlier. Like, I'm telling you guys, the Canadiens are going to be a 500 team in like 2 weeks.
Don't worry, Gabe. The only team that's playing crappier than the Canadiens are the Leafs. Losers are five in a row. They look absolutely gross watching this team play.
They're just a gutless bunch.
No, they're a hard team.
The Canadians are young and learning.
Yes,
the Canadians are young and learning and thought they were better than they were. It's a little reality check now.
You know what the saddest thing is? When Tavares is like the guy on your team that's working and like yelling at you, like, there's nobody, like, I'm watching these guys play. Go, does anybody want to be here? Like, what's wrong with you guys? The work ethic stinks. It's not
as a goal. It just stinks.
It's you know what it is? I think they might be trying to get him fired, but firing.
I think so.
But that's what the Leafs do. Oh, let's go through this coach. Babcock's not good enough. Then we go to him. Like, that's all they do is fire coaches, and it's the same damn results. Nice guy, bad guy, you know, intense guy, chill guy. It doesn't matter. It's the players, right?
I can't disagree. No,
it's not the coach.
I don't blame Austin Matthews, but he's not captain material. He's like, his personality.
He's not tough enough.
He doesn't talk, right? Like, he doesn't.
He's very
like,
laid back.
Yeah. So it's the intense, like, they don't have, like, listen, it's the same thing here in Vancouver, guys.
Very similar. People
flipped out about Quinn Hughes after the game last week, Mo, here. Quinn Hughes, after they lost, and he was basically like, yeah, you know, we're trying out there. Yeah, no. Like, it was just very, it was a pathetic press conference. Like, you're the captain of the team, bro. Like, you just can't, like, give yes and no answers. Like, it has to, you have to have some passion. Like, Quinn Hughes looked like he just didn't give an F. Like, people were like, does he care even? Like, is he checked out of Vancouver already? Does he care? And it wasn't, and people showed Austin Matthews talking after a game. And it was the same thing. He was like, yeah, whatever, like. Very just sort of like, dude, you got to step up and show some fire here. Like, you've got to send a message to your teammates, like through the media even. And then they showed a clip. And get this, the Vancouver Whitecaps guys have only lost one game since Mueller's arrived, all right? We lost twice. We lost August 9th, and we were against Dallas. They got a man down early in the game. Vancouver played with 10 men, and they lost the game. And they showed the clip of Mueller after the game. Mueller's only been on the Whitecaps for 6 months. Mueller after the game. It's unacceptable. We can't lose.
I love this.
We have built a culture of winning, and I won't allow this. I won't allow this. Like, dude, you would have thought they lost the World Cup. He lost a regular season MLS game. And he goes, we don't take step back. We don't go backwards here. We go forward. This was a step backwards. Like, he was like, he basically said, we will practice hard. Like, that was a message to the team. We will practice hard this week, and this will not happen again. Like, it was like, whoa, man. Like, and people were like, you know, four-time champ, league champ, two World Cup. And well, people, that's what a champion. That's like the champion mentality. And he basically said, he goes, we played hard, but we were down a man, but we, you know, he called out the city of Vancouver, guys. He called out the city of Vancouver.
And he just got there. Love this game.
He goes, I find living in Vancouver, there's a culture of losing here. You believe he said that? He goes, I find that people don't think they can win, and there's a culture of losing. And he said, none of your teams ever win. He called it out. He goes, none of the teams ever win here. He goes, I'm going to change this. He goes, I'm going to change the culture of this city. It's like, whoa, man, like this guy, like that's what you need, man. Right? That's the type of passion that you need. You know what it reminded me of, Mo, going back years ago? People thought it was over dramatic at the time, but remember Tim Tebow.
Right.
They lost Alabama. They lost one game.
See, it's Ole Miss. They lost Ole Miss in the home game, yeah.
And then after during the press conference after, he broke down in tears, started slamming the desk, and he said, "We will never lose another game." he said, "I just that'll never happen again." Like, no. And he went off. Like they actually did lose again. But yeah. The whole point was that he, you know what I mean? He was the captain, and he basically was like, losing is unacceptable. But and I get in the NHL, you're gonna lose games, but my whole point is like the Quinn Hugheses, the Austin Matthews, all these young kids, superstars, they don't have it. Like they don't have that intensity factor.
You don't have to be somebody who you're not, but you also have to sense when there's a time to talk. That's the whole thing. Like, I'm not asking you to be Mr. Mouthpiece all the time. Some people have that personality, but you got to step up. You said it, you're a leader, figure it out. That's the thing. Or don't wear the C, let somebody else do it.
Well, they shouldn't have given it to him, but all right. So, Mo, Raiders, Cowboys, what's your pick?
Yeah.
Oh God! I think Cowboys are going to take care of business. Easy.
He barely easy. Did. This game easy. Reeks, but I'll take the Cowboys.
Cowboys are 3.5-point favorites. It's -190. Man, they're scaring us off with that money line. Minus.
How about that? How about that total, Gabe? Points, no defense on both sides. Over.
I don't know if the Raiders can score.
The Raiders can't score, Cam.
Yeah.
Cam,
against Dallas, they can.
If they get 9 points against the Cowboys, if they get 9 points against the Cowboys, that is a revolution of offensive style.
What's their team total? I'll take that's one team you could score on is the Dallas Cowboys.
I'll say this, though. If Bowers and Genty go off,
the Raiders team total is 20.5.
Yeah, see, 9.5. I think the Raiders – I think Dallas wins this game – like 35-27, something like that. I think it's going to shoot out.
27, wow. That'd be like – that's like air raid offense right there for the Raiders.
Yeah, it could go right up. Jim Plunkett's back.
More.
Uh-oh.
28-14.
Oh, wow, under. Interesting.
I'm thinking like 30 – I'm thinking like 38 to like 18.
I'm not the over of all these games. Say
some crazy number like
that. No. I was on the under. No, Gabe, this is the one that goes – This I know. No, trust me. I don't play as totals like you, but I just don't see any defenses.
56% of primetime games have gone
under. Oh, unders are the way to go. Like, that's just – like, I love betting unders. And I saw Raiders. That wind last night. Like, it's like under. Wind is,
the Raiders
wind is
suck.
Huge.
Like,
they do suck. It's going to be a Cowboy home game on top of
that. Cowboys suck. Raiders suck. But,
yeah, it's
terrible. We'll see.
Yeah, but a Cowboys offense is good at least.
Correct.
The Raiders offense is not. Yep. Like, I don't think the Raiders get to their team total, like, to be honest. It's 20.5. I'd be surprised if they scored 21 points.
Yeah, P-Cow will be coaching this team next year.
It's a disaster.
Yeah, you'll be there next year.
And, you know, it goes back to the also. Don't forget, Tom Brady was the one that wanted Geno Smith, too. And, like,
Over Sam Darnold. Carroll.
And Pete Carroll, yeah. The football people before, like, the advisors were basically, they said, we think Sam Darnold is the best available quarterback. And Tom Brady was like, no. And then Pete Carroll was like, well, let's bring in Geno Smith then. and listen, I'm not saying Sam, it'll be the same crap with Sam Darnold. The Raiders are just a clown show. It is what it is. And they always will be. That's the whole thing, guys. And I remember this is better. I got to remember this is a better sometimes. Like, you know, I bet on Detroit last night. It's like, they're the Detroit Lions. Like, and then I'm going to act surprised if they suck again. They've never made it to a Super Bowl. they've sucked like their entire franchise history, right? Like, teams don't change in the NFL. They really don't. Like, they just kind of, all these teams, they're like people. They just kind of are who they are. All right, great job, Cam. Great job, Mo. Thanks to everybody for tuning in. We'll see you on the grid. Monday night football. Other than that, you're on your own later.